Hello, everyone. My name is Harriet Bambro.
And I'm Amelia Milanopoulos. Today, we're going to each present to you our poems that we picked up.
We'll be talking about the author, reciting the poem, then doing a bit of personal reflection, and finally, analyzing and talking about what the author wanted to convey.
So let's get started. So the poem that I chose is called Pocket Size Feminism by Blythe Baird. I chose to stick to the same poet that I picked for my assignment a few weeks ago because her literary work touches on sexual assault, mental illness, eating disorder recovery, sexuality, and healing, which are very relevant in today's society. Mm-hmm. She's also an award-winning writer originating from the northwest suburbs of Chicago. She is known for being an honest public speaker, which is why so many people can relate to her poetry. So here it is.
The only other girl at the party is ranting about feminism. The audience, a sea of rape jokes and snapbacks and styrofoam cups in me. They gawk at her mouth like it is a drain, clogged with too many opinions. I shoot her an empathetic glance and say nothing. This house is for a wallpaper woman. What good is wallpaper that speaks? I want to stand up, but if I do, whose coffee table silence will these boys rest their feet on? These boys. I want to stand up, but if I do, what if someone takes my spot? I want to stand up, but if I do, what if everyone notices I've been sitting this whole time? I am ashamed of keeping my feminism in my pocket until it is convenient not to, like at poetry slams or women's study classes. There are days I want people to like me more than I want to change the world. Once, I forgave a predator because I was afraid to start drama in our friend group. 2 weeks later, he assaulted someone else. I'm still carrying the guilt in my purse. There are days I forget we have to invent nail polish to change color in drug drinks and apps to virtually walk us home in lipstick-shaped mace and underwear designed to prevent rape. Once a man behind me on an escalator shoved his hand up my skirt from behind and no one around me said anything. So I didn't say anything because I didn't want to make a scene. Once an adult man made a necklace out of his hands for me and I still wake up in hot sweats, haunted with images of the hurt of girls he assaulted after I didn't report. All younger than me. How am I to forgive myself for doing nothing in the mouth of trauma? Is silence not an act of violence too? Once, I told a boy I was powerful, and he told me to mind my own business. Once, a boy accused me of practicing misandry. You think you can take over the world? And I said, no, I just want to see it. I just need to know if it is there for someone. Once, my dad informed me sexism is dead, and reminded me to always carry pepper spray in the same breath. We accept this state of constant fear as just another component of being a girl. We text each other when we get home safe, and it does not occur to us that not all our guy friends have to do the same. You could literally saw a woman in half, and it would still be called a magic trick, wouldn't it? That's why you invited us here, isn't it? Because there is no show without a beautiful assistant? We are surrounded by boys who hang up our naked posters and fantasize about choking us and watching movies that we get murdered in. We are the daughters of men who warned us about the news and the missing girls on the milk carton and the sharp edge of the world. They begged us to be careful, to be safe, then told our brothers to go out and play.
So I would say that this poem spoke to me personally because it demonstrates the double standard in today's society. So when I personally read this poem, I thought about the many girls at our school, including myself, who have been victimized for wearing short skirts. Would that happen to boys? I don't really think so. So it's not up to the school to decide how we wear our skirts. I mean, it's our decision. And I feel like the school staff really associates our short skirts with wanting to attract others sexually, when in reality, it is done for aesthetic purposes. So double standard is a subject that has been spoken about a lot recently on social media, along with feminism. And I thought it would be really interesting to relate this poem to the current inequalities between men and women.
That's really interesting. I can agree with you on the fact that this poem relates to problems that are well known in our society.
That's right. So unfortunately, it sits as our reality in today's society.
So what message do you think she's trying to transmit throughout this poem?
So I believe she's trying to transmit a powerful message about rape culture by encouraging us to speak up. Mm-hmm. So throughout her poetry, she encourages discussion about feminism with those around us in order to educate ourselves and the future generations. She made her listeners feel so powerless, vulnerable, and alone, which is why I think she did such a great job in this poem. In fact, she installs her readers into many situations that involve infuriating settings, including sexism. For example, Barrett starts off her poem by setting her audience in a party, which is obviously a classic. Mm-hmm. So she writes, "The audience, a sea of rape jokes and snapbacks, and styrofoam cups and me." So she relates parties to rape because, I mean, it involves alcohol, so then you become disoriented, and obviously consent is equally never taken into consideration. Anyway, it's a setting that we are all basically familiar with, and these first lines spoke to me personally because I know for a fact as a woman that I could be taken advantage of in these types of situations, which honestly truly breaks my heart. And I also heard many stories that happened in those very similar environments.
Yeah, I completely agree. She did an excellent job transmitting her message. And Baird equally points out many habits that women should adopt and are adopting to ensure their safety. Do you think this is normalized?
Yes, I completely agree on the fact that it's normalized. So I'm just going to read you this passage, and honestly just going to answer the question for you. So here it is. "Once my dad informed me sexism is dead and reminded me to always carry pepper spray in the same breath." I mean, the father just said that sexism is dead. Meanwhile, he's telling her daughter to bring pepper spray with her. So mm-hmm. obviously that's completely false. So this sentence is mainly the most important one. So, "We accept this state of constant fear as just another component of being a girl. We text each other when we get home safe, and it does not occur to us that not all of our guy friends have to do all the same." And I quote, "We accept this state of constant fear." I mean, think about that for a second.
Yeah, that's a really good example. I equally noticed in this poem how women silence themselves in order to maintain a good image and to avoid quote-unquote problems. And Baird writes, "Once a man behind me at an escalator shoved his hand up my skirt from behind, and no one around me said nothing. So I didn't say anything because I didn't want to make a scene."
I completely agree with you, and especially the fact that we should not silence ourselves hoping to make change. So I also read this line from the poem. So Blair writes, "Once I forgave a predator because I was afraid to start drama in our friend group. 2 weeks later, he assaulted someone else." So once I read this quote, I mean, it clearly demonstrates that silence will never be the answer to the problem. I mean, I have to say that, especially recently, we have done our part, all women together, by sharing our stories. And obviously, a lot of people have shared it on social media, mostly mm-hmm. Instagram. That's where I saw it. And they should really be proud of themselves because it really takes courage to share their story. Because, yeah. I mean, it brings back all those hard emotions that they felt in that moment that never really left them and that honestly will haunt them for the rest of their lives if they never tell anyone about it or keep it to themselves. And in relation to this poem, I think that we have shown that we are listening and that we are here to support you, all women together.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Thank you so much for reciting your poem and analyzing it. It's clear that it resonated a lot with you. All right. Now, the poem that I chose is called Blackberry Picking. It is written by Seamus Heaney. Heaney is an Irish poet born in 1939 and passed away in 2013. He was a poet, playwright, and translator. He received the Nobel Prize in Literature in 1975 for, and I quote, "works of lyrical beauty and ethical depth, which exalt everyday miracles and the living past," end quote. He taught at Harvard University and served as the professor of poetry at Oxford. Now I will read you the poem.
Blackberry Picking. Late August, given heavy rain and sun, for a full week, the blackberries would ripen. At first, just one, a glossy purple clot, among others, red, green, hard as a knot. You ate that first one, and its flesh was sweet. Like thickened wine, summer's blood was in it, leaving stains upon the tongue and lust for picking. Then red ones inked up that hunger, sent us out with milk cans, pea tins, jam pots, where briar scratched, and wet grass bleached our boots. Round hayfields, cornfields, and potato drills, we trekked and picked until the cans were full, until the tinkling bottom had been covered with green ones, and on top, big dark blobs burned, like a plate of eyes. Our hands were peppered with thorn pricks, our palms sticky as bluebeards. We hoarded the fresh berries in the byre, but when the bath was filled, we found a fur, a rat-gray fungus, glutting on our catch. The juice was stinking, too. Once off the bush, the fruit fermented. The sweet flesh would turn sour. I always felt like crying. It wasn't fair that all the lovely canfuls smelt of rot. Each year, I hoped they'd keep. Knew they would not.
All right, so this poem speaks to me personally because when I was younger, my family and I would go on road trips to Big Sur and just Northern California. After all, we lived in Los Angeles. That was our go-to. I think that those camping memories were the best memories I have because my friends, my brother and I, we would all go down to the river and climb the rocks until we reached this waterfall. And it would be without any parental supervision. And we would be there for hours and we'd just be able to entertain ourselves. And it was such a good time.
That sounds really fun, Harriet. I would completely agree with you on the fact that this poem kind of is described as a childhood memory. So personally, I would relate this poem to my summers at my grandparents' cottage in Greece. So we would stay in this small village where everyone kind of knew each other and all the kids would go play at nighttime. It was so fun. And during the day, I went to these beaches where there were rocks that you could jump off to go in the ocean. And I remember going there with some of my friends as well. And I think more specifically, I remember when my grandmother and I would pick these fruits. They're called sika. I mean, I don't know how to say it in English, but that's a Greek term. So I associate certain memories with parts of this poem. So here's an example. So this is one of the quotes. You ate that first one and its fresh flesh was sweet, like thickened wine. Summer's blood was in it. So here I associate picking fruits with my grandmother during the summer with this line because it was such a powerful memory for me. And, you know, I still remember it to this day.
Yeah, I agree. I love this poem because it speaks of small details that only people living in the moment would appreciate and treasure. And as a kid, you're constantly living in the present. And so you are the few lucky ones to appreciate the small details that life has to offer.
Yeah, that's really true, actually. So why do you think you chose this one over other poems that have very similar descriptions?
I felt drawn to this poem because blackberries are also very familiar and nostalgic to me because when we would camp in redwood forest, like I mentioned before, we would go blackberry picking and make jam out at the campsite with our little gas stove. So now I associate blackberries with when I was much younger and camping and playing in the forest and having a very big imagination.
That's really interesting. So tell me about the actual meaning and the author's intention of his poem.
For sure. I feel like my interpretation was very lighthearted and innocent, much more than what the author originally intended.
Yeah, for sure. It's almost like the paint splotches that a psychiatrist shows their patients to determine their mental state. Like everyone sees the same thing, but differently.
That's a really good comparison, actually. I guess if the poem was a paint splotch, someone could say that I hang on to my childhood memories and value those moments. And it's something that I see in a lot of things. I always see the good in things. But in the poem, blackberries actually represent something valuable and precious that people are willing to do anything to get a taste of. Like at one point he writes, I quote, "And lust for picking, then red ones inked up, and that hunger sent us out with milk cans, pea tins, jam pots, where briars scratched and wet grass bleached our boots," end quote.
I see. So it's like people are fixated on one thing and are willing to be cut by the thorns, metaphorically speaking, just to get what they want.
Yeah, exactly. So Heaney compares blackberries to something precious and how greedy people can be. This also ties into like gluttony and taking more than our share. Hence why they try to fill as many containers as possible. Afterwards, he compares the sticky blackberry stained hands to Bluebeard's, who is a murderer in some well-known fairy tales. He would kill his wives with his bare hands and they would be covered in blood. So Heaney, the poem's author, compares the blackberry juice to blood.
Really cool. So I also remember towards the end, it describes the blackberries as rotten with fungus. I mean, does that really mean anything?
The way I interpreted it, this part was that people often take advantage of something and destroy it in hopes to have it all to themselves. So we love blackberries and we tear them off their branches greedily. Our lust for them is destructive and we can't seem to just appreciate them from afar and just appreciate for what they are. This also goes for other things. It's kind of a metaphor, you know, the blackberry represents anything that you want.
Yeah.
It to represent. So in the beginning, the blackberries are ripe and fresh and perfect, but later on, after they're done collecting them, you find mold and fungus that has begun to grow. I also think this is similar to Robert Frost's poem called Nothing Gold Can Stay, where it talks about how we can't hold on to something good forever and we must appreciate the good times and accept the fact that they can go bad or disappear on us. So the blackberries will go bad at one point and we can't really do anything about it. We just have to respect that and appreciate it when it's there in front of us.
I completely agree with you on that point. You explained that poem super well and I really enjoyed talking to you about it and I see how we really connected personally to it.
Thank you so much, Amelia, for sharing your poem with us as well.
Thank you so much for listening.